Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Thursday, the 1st of February. Today, I shall be joined by Duncan Balkan, who is a Watson's Daily Ambassador. Hey there, Duncan, how are you doing today?
Hi, Peter. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Very good. Today, what would you like to talk about from Watson's Daily's edition? Oh, I can't speak again. What would you like to story would you like to talk about for today? Yeah, that's a good idea. Good idea.
I'm taking a departure from my my rule for the week, which has been pick an FT article. Yeah. And I'm going for the Daily Telegraph this time.
Nice.
And it's a story about Boohoo, you know, the fashionable guy.
Of course.
I keep up to date with all the fashion stuff.
Of course.
That's what they call it, right?
Anyway,
so this story is about Boohoo, who, anyone that's not aware, Boohoo haven't exactly been having a great time of it recently. Financially, they're not doing that well. And this story is about lenders squeezing them even further. They have been trying to extend their repayment deadline on a £325 million debt. And that kind of seems to be falling on deaf ears because sales are still continuing to fall. Now, Boohoo did really well during the pandemic, but has since not been doing so well, and share prices plummeted by 90% since then. So it's really, really on the way down. And I think that kind of makes it ripe for one or two things, really. One is dumping on the scrap heap and forgetting about forever. And the other is a takeover by somebody who fancies putting in a cheeky bid and trying to, you know, resurrect some of it, because I think there is some good stuff there. Boohoo was very popular. So you could think for somebody, it might be worth a cheeky takeover bid. The reason I find that particular angle interesting is because the sort of person I think that would put in a cheeky takeover bid on something like Boohoo in this state would be someone like Fraser's Group, you know, like Ashley. And the reason I personally find that interesting is because amongst other companies under the Boohoo umbrella, Debenhams is one of those, who, for anyone that can't remember, Mike actually tried and failed to buy a few years ago. So it would be an interesting kind of two-for-one deal there if Mike Ashley was interested. You know, pick up Boohoo, my turn to fail to speak English properly.
Boohoo did quite
well under the pandemic, and like I said, has since been struggling. And you know, it could do well with the experience and kind of money behind someone like Fraser's Group. But also the two-for-one of getting Debenhams, a company he's already publicly said he wanted, I think would be kind of an interesting thing. So yeah, overall story there. Boohoo not doing very well, trying to get an extension on a huge amount of debt. Looks like they're not going to get that extension because sales are still plummeting. And like I said, I think either Scrap Heap or someone like Fraser's Group and Mike Ashley buying them out, I think, are kind of the two ways this could go now. I just find that kind of really interesting, like I said, particularly with that Debenhams angle for Mike Ashley. What's your take on this one?
Well, you know, I mean, Boohoo is clearly, I mean, they're in a lot of trouble. And I mean, it is amazing how far they have fallen. 90%, in fact. It is amazing how far they've fallen. I do think this just seems to me to have, you know, Mike Ashley written all over it, this, because he loves picking up distressed assets at fire sale prices. And now that everyone knows that Boohoo's lenders aren't playing ball, you would have thought they're going to have to sell off some assets or something. But if that doesn't work, then maybe that's the end of Boohoo. So that would be that would be quite incredible. And we're only doing if here, but if Mike Ashley did decide to do this, you know, he could perhaps potentially put the whole Debenhams and House of Fraser, so you know, the whole House of Debenhams that he was after all that time ago.
That was really a powerhouse idea, wasn't it? House of Debenhams. That's a powerhouse idea that never came to fruition.
Yeah, well, powerhouse idea in a dying industry.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Now, you know, I think the thing is that obviously we're now a few years on from that. House of Fraser's still not doing particularly well. I mean, even the, you know, the House of Fraser in Guildford, for instance, closed down, you know, a while ago now. And that was quite sad, that, because it is right slap bang in the centre of town. It is a massive space, and it's just weird going past it, and it's kind of empty, mostly empty. I mean, actually, in over Christmas, they decided to do a window dressing thing, and they put some Christmas stuff in it. But you know, so that it wasn't too depressing. But yeah, I mean, it's a funny thing, but maybe now, you know, there's been this huge clear out. I mean, the thing is that Boohoo have got the, you know, the rights to the Debenhams name, and I think they've got the online assets or something like that. So I mean, you know, there's something there, and of course they've got all the other, these other brands as well. So it might not be, you know, it might not be too outrageous for him to do. But the thing, well, there'd be a few things. One is, the main thing though, is I wonder how that would go with the competition regulators potentially, because they'd be thinking, oh, hold on, he's literally buying everything. But
well, that's because Boohoo also, as well as Debenhams, you're looking at Dorothy Perkins, Burton, Oasis, I think.
Yeah,
there's some pretty big names under that. Like I said, competition might sit there and go, okay.
Yeah, and it. But then again, it might be that he could. I mean, again, we're just speculating. But you know, you could buy that, and then he could sell off some of the ones that don't fit with his strategy. Yeah. But it's a bit weird because, you know, he's got such a massive. Anyone, you know, listening to this, I'd recommend go and look them up on you know, Fraser's Group. Look them up on Wikipedia. You will be amazed at how many brands they have, like so many brands. And you know, the thing is that Fraser's Group generally is trying to become more upmarket. I mean, I didn't go in the other day. I was on Oxford Street the other day, and I walked past Fraser's for the first time I've ever actually seen that one. Not Fraser's, Flannels, right, which is owned by Fraser's. And, you know, they own Flannels. They've got, they've been building up a stake in Hugo Boss. You know, they've got, like I say, they've got other various other brands.
I think it's the range of brands as well, I think, that surprised most people, because there's everything from, like you said, the ones everyone knows about things. So you've got the House of Fraser, you've got like the Sports Direct side of things. But there's things like Jack Wills, and then I think Game on the other end of the spectrum, and Evans Cycles, and all sorts of things. That like, the spectrum of things they're involved in is huge.
Yeah. I mean, ironically, he's got enough brands across enough, such a broad spectrum. He kind of needs a department store to sell them all in, you know. I mean, he's got bike brands. I mean, I don't know if it's still, you know, a thing, but whether he's in the running for it. But you know, there's Wiggle. I mean, have you ever? Do you know Wiggle?
I do know Wiggle. Yeah,
yeah. Because I really liked it. I mean, Wiggle's brilliant. You know, online shop. You know, back in the day when I used to do a lot of cycling and triathlon and stuff. You know, they were the go-to for me. I thought they were really, really good. And obviously, you know, they haven't done well. They haven't, you know, obviously they're another casualty, I guess, of lockdown. Although, I mean, they did well in a way because obviously cycling became very suddenly very popular when everyone wanted bikes and stuff. But then that kind of seemed to be relatively short-lived. You know, he's already got... it's Evans, isn't it? I think he's got
Evans Cycles, yeah.
Yeah, and what's that other one? There's another one as well, Cycle Surgery, I think, that's part of that. So all of those things. So he's got all of this. He's got all of this stuff, and it's just kind of, well, I say, kind of random. So I don't know. I mean, wouldn't it be interesting if he did buy? You know, if he did buy this Boohoo. And he could further split the brands, maybe consolidate a few, or maybe he just puts it all in house, melds the Debenhams online and the House of Fraser together, and you know, and goes forward like that. Because now, as he's got control of so many quite famous brands, the department stores are the place that he could sell it.
He can stock pretty much an entire department store now with all those brands. And who knows? A couple of years post pandemic, maybe the time is now to try and revive the department store.
Yeah.
Because there's not such a pressure, I think, for everyone to shop online. People aren't scared of going outside anymore.
Mm.
And you never know. Now might be the time to try and really actively push a kind of a resurgence in department stores. You don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be too surprised if department stores do show a bit of a resurgence just because. There's more people seem to be on the high streets now than even like a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll have to change though. I do think.
Absolutely.
Because I think
the format.
Yeah, and pricing somehow. I mean, that's the thing. I think what they really need to do is to A, concentrate on the experience aspect, but also they need to somehow make the pricing better so that the difference between what they charge and what is charged online. Yeah. Isn't so huge.
You always want to make them almost like outlet store pricing, don't you? Kind of maybe not the brand new stuff, maybe not last season's. This is showing you how little I know about fashion. But you know what I mean? Like the sort of price structure you get at an outlet store or a company store for places. Mm. I used to live up the road from the Dr. Martin's one just outside Wellingborough, and you used to get fantastic stuff at way less than the online price.
Oh, right.
For whatever reason. Mm. And you feel like someone like Fraser's Group would have the ability to do that. And do really competitive pricing because like I said they'd own probably all the brands that are in there. You wouldn't be having to have other brands come in and hire space or that works.
But then again, it does depend as well what his ultimate aim is. I mean, it looks like he's trying to go more upmarket rather than the pile them high, sell them cheap sports direct model.
And because, Boohoo very much fits that model, doesn't it? It's aimed at 16s to 30s, fast fashion.
Yeah,
it's not particularly, like I say, it's not the high end.
Yeah,
of things. Well, the Debenhams would be so. This is more speculative as well because we don't know that he's going to even put a bid.
No, exactly. And let's face it, we could have just wasted the last 6 or so minutes, really.
But it's
fun, right? It's fun.
Absolutely.
We'll move across the Atlantic. All in the space of one podcast. And it's free. Of course, there was an interesting article from the FT. Love the FT.
Me too.
And it's just highlighting how much effort that Temu, which is owned by PDD Holdings, is how much effort they're putting into the American market. So they apparently spent something like $3 billion last year on advertising in America. And what they've done is they've built up their market share fairly quickly. And now, you know, they are one of the biggest advertisers in America alongside Amazon, Target and Walmart. Now, the thing is that clearly throwing money at this and becoming big thanks to advertising, you know, paying for it is one thing. But the problem is then how do you sustain it? Are you going to sustain the ad spend, or is the ad spend something that sort of gets you, you know, a seat at the table, if you like, and then once you're there, then it's okay. You know, your name's out there. It's all good. But you know, I thought this was a very interesting thing that this article mentioned, which was a comparison with the company Wish, the Chinese company Wish. Mm. Now, Wish was selling cheap goods that were made in China to US customers, and it listed in 2020. And at this point, it had a valuation of $14 billion, but it is now worth $107 million.
Hmm.
So that looks to me like a cautionary tale, and something that Temu needs to look at, and also any potential investors in Temu need to look at, because throwing ad dollars around does not necessarily guarantee long-term success. Well, I say long-term. I mean, that's 2020. We're 2024 now. That's hardly long-term. So, yeah, I mean, this is the interesting thing, because Wish went wrong because it's there were sales of counterfeit goods. And, you know, I think the quality wasn't that good. Now, as far as I know, the quality, Temu quality, is not amazing. I mean, that's not necessarily across the board. And the other thing as well, of course, because it's going from China to the US, it takes something like anything between 1 and 3 weeks to get something from China to the US. And then you've got the express delivery option, which takes between 4 and 9 days. So hardly, you know, not something that the sort of delivery timing is not something that is going to worry Amazon.
And that's the thing, the story is talking about them trying to challenge Amazon. And like you said, with Amazon delivering nearly everything now, next day, if not same day, an express delivery option of four to nine days isn't really going to concern them too much, I shouldn't think.
No. So, I think this is an interesting story. The other thing as well, of course, is that by the fact that it's throwing so much money at advertising means that it is effectively making advertising more expensive for everyone else because it is taking up so much bandwidth, as it were. So anyway, we'll just have to see whether it does manage to take on Amazon in its own backyard. I mean, I don't think Amazon has done particularly well in China, for instance. I think I'm not sure actually if they're still there. I'm not quite sure, but you know, it's interesting that Temu is taking the fight back to Amazon. And we'll see whether we'll just have to see whether that works and whether all of that money has been spent in the right way.
I think it's interesting because like I said, Wish faltered for a number of reasons, one of which, like you said, was the quality of the products. And I think it's not a case of them being just poor quality products. I think the problem here is if you don't hit a customer's expectation as to what they expect that quality to be. Because I'd say for things like Wish and Temu, I know some people have bought things off both. And because you pay significantly less on average for an item, I think you are expecting it to not be as high a quality. But I think that's the thing, though, that you set an expectation of what quality you're thinking it's going to be. If it falls below that, which I think is what Wish were doing, is it wasn't just kind of cheap and cheerful knockoffs of things. It was cheap and cheerful knockoffs of things that fell apart and weren't actually stitched properly. And like I said, or were completely counterfeit, which is just a big no-no. And I think that's the point, is if you're going to download one of these apps, I think, and buy things at a significantly reduced price, you probably expect a slightly reduced quality.
Slightly reduced.
Or significantly reduced quality. But do you know what I mean? But if it's where the quality actually sits compared to that expectation, that I think, particularly for Wish, really ruined them. So if Temu were able to churn stuff out, kind of fast fashion style, and not take such a hit on the quality, you might find that people reorder. I think that's where the issue is, isn't it, really? Is getting someone to download an app and buy one item is one thing. Getting them to reorder and reorder and reorder, which is what makes
it's another,
which makes the $3 billion investment almost seem worth it. It's not worth it unless people are reordering. Because even if you hit a million people and they order one thing, you've wasted your money. So I think it's just maintaining a high enough standard that people aren't disappointed and then reorder. And I think that's the balance that Wish probably missed. And you know, Temu might do better. You don't know.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, in that previous case, and the fact that they thought that they might be able to take on Amazon in their own backyard is possibly a case for wishful thinking. And on that bombshell, I'm so sorry.
That was brilliant. Oh, that is the perfect way to finish a podcast. I love it.
I'm so sorry. I had to do that. Apologies for the dad joke there. But anyway, yes, you know, interesting stuff. We'll see how it works out. I mean, Temu's doing a lot of stuff here as well, isn't it? I I mean, you can't literally can't get away from it.
If they're putting that much into the States, they must be putting a fair amount over here, because I can't scroll through Facebook now without seeing something. And it's normally something that's similar to something I've looked at on Amazon.
Yeah.
Maybe not even bought, but something similar to something I've looked at. So they're obviously getting their marketing strategy about right, and obviously buying information from people. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, if they're putting more into the States, they must be really hammering the advertising over there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So there we go. I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Duncan, for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
And apologies once again for the dad joke. and thank you very much for listeners for listening. There's some new cool stuff coming out, actually. So today I'm trying to put out the first LinkedIn newsletter that I've done since the summer. So we're going to try and revive that again, because that was actually quite good fun. Obviously, you know, we've got this podcast. There's another Legal Liz podcast as well. So look out for all those things. The whole idea is to try and help you as listeners to understand all this kind of stuff, so that you sound even more intelligent than you already currently do. So there you go.
Yes. Anyway. As much as we wasted 6 minutes talking about a hypothetical earlier, that is the sort of conversation I think that's good to be able to replicate if you're going into that sort of environment, isn't it? Where you need to talk about potentials in the
interviews. Absolutely. Absolutely. So anyway, thank you very much indeed. Have a great day, and we'll be back again tomorrow. Many thanks.
Peter.
See ya. Bye.